All right. The Shulchan Aruch begins in Siman Tav Reish Lamed Tes and Aruch Chaim. Ketan Mitzvah Yeshiva Sukkah. So how do you properly turn the Sukkah? Sheyeh Ochel B'Shoseh. He should eat and drink. B'Yashen U'B'Tayel. He should sleep. And he should hang out in the Sukkah. B'Dar B'Sukkah Kol Shabbat Yom. And he should live in the Sukkah all 7 days. Bein B'Yom U'Bein B'Layla. Whether during the day or during the night. K'derek Shehu Dar B'Veso B'Shar Yom Shun. As he lived there all year round in his own house. So too he should live in the Sukkah. And all year round, the river should make his home be arai and his sukkah be keva. Keza, how do you do that? So the nice vessels you have, you know, the nice sheets, everything you have, bring them out to the sukkah. The clay shtia, now it's the vessels that you use to drink from, kigon ashishos, kosos, the sukkah. Those should be brought to the sukkah. However, avo clay achila, vessels used for eating. After you finish eating from the Torah, you go kederes ka'aros, such as pots, such as plates, chutz v'sukkah. Those should go outside of the sukkah. Hamnor v'sukkah, you should have your candelabra in the sukkah. Of imayis a sukkah katana, but if it was a small sukkah, manicha chutz v'sukkah. However, if it was something where you were in a situation where it was a small sukkah, you have to leave that outside the sukkah. You're supposed to leave that outside the sukkah. Okay, the Ramah adds in. V'aliyas es shum tashmish bazoi v'sukkah. You shouldn't do anything degrading the sukkah. Kedei shelo yu mitzvos zuyos alav. So you should make sure not to do anything that's lowly in the sukkah, so that way mitzvos should not be zuyos in your eyes. Okay, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says in Zif Aleph. Now let's begin to analyze it. Okay, so now we say specifically that it's supposed to be your home. Okay, that means, say, that the sukkah is supposed to be as your home was all year round. Now the question is, how do you demonstrate that best? Right? We know we're going to see how you're supposed to do all these things in the sukkah. However, what are you supposed to do to your home? Are you supposed to strip it bare? On one hand, as you're going to go and make the sukkah be keva, how do you make your home arai? Is there any din to actually make your home be more arai? And I thought perhaps you could say that there's a diuk based on the language of the Gemara itself, that perhaps it's supposed to be specifically the items you had in your home that you bring out to the sukkah. Now, we need to say, you might have thought that, oh, I'm supposed to make my sukkah beautiful. How do I make my sukkah beautiful? I buy a second leather couch, and I go and I place it inside my sukkah, and that makes the sukkah keva. Ah, perhaps. But maybe there's something deeper. Maybe you're also supposed to go ahead and make your home be arai at the same time to heighten that contrast, to show how your home is really the sukkah, and your home all year round is really not your home at this time. So, there's actually a little bit of basis that now that I don't know. The Dirshuv footnotes bring here, they explain that the El Yerava quotes and the Chayyim quotes, Shet Yifros Mapa Rak Al Shochan Sheva Sukkah below Al Shochan Sheva Bayis. You should only spread out a tablecloth in your sukkah's table, not in your home's table. Why is that? In order to heighten that contrast, that this is where you're living right now. Not just that you decorate it pretty, that's obviously true. You have to make it look like a home, you have to make it like, feel like a home. But aside from that, in terms of contrasting it to your home, what do you do to your home? Leave it bare. You don't have the same tablecloth on it. That's what the Chazanish and the that's what the El Yerava and the Chayyavim said. And in fact, this is the minhag of the Chazanish. However, the Prima got in the Mat Ephraim, also according to this Dirshu from the right, and nonetheless, you should still have a tablecloth on your home. So they disagree with at least this component of it. Why? Not fundamentally. They disagree with it because then you'll have an issue of Simchas Yontif. Right? You're going to have this ugly table, you're going to walk into your home, you're going to bring out stuff that looks bad. So now you should still, the Kavod Yontif, have a tablecloth. But they're not arguing fundamentally. You should read from all of these Achronim that there's an idea, perhaps, to make sure that your home is also decreased, not merely your sukkah increased. Right? That's something that might not have been kosher, but I think there's, again, the language of the Gemara is that ha'yulo kelim na'im ma'alam the sukkah. If you have nice kelim, you bring them to the sukkah. Matzos knows ma'alam the sukkah. You bring those very ones to the sukkah. It doesn't say buy new ones and have a nice sukkah. Maybe that's also a kelim, certainly. But I would think, aside from that, perhaps there's value of having specifically your home vessels brought into the sukkah. Now, just an example of that in my own lifetime, your Rabbi Apfel, I had the privilege of trying to bet to spend, you know, that sukkahs by the Apfels. I'm trying to see my voice. It was Shema sukkahs. Now, I remember being so impressed how his sukkah literally felt like a home. Because the very leather couches he had inside of his house, he brought them right out into the sukkah, right into his backyard, beautiful Ramat Beit Shemesh. So, good muster for all of us. When we're trying to build our own sukkahs, make it like a home in every way you possibly can. And perhaps there's this added aspect of making your home feel less like a home during that time to heighten this contrast, to show, again, the language of the Gemara, say Nidiras Kamashalcha, right? And make that one be Arai. And make your sukkah be your Nidiras Kamashalcha. Great. That's one point. Let's move on. That's just a side point. Now let's talk about this Shinon and Teal idea. Right? We have over here these other aspects. Achila and Shena, those are things we're going to discuss in the upcoming Sefim, so we're not going to focus on them for tonight's Chabura. However, these other details, making sure you learn in the Sukkah, that we're going to get to in Sif Dalet, and Teal right over here, this line which the Ramah throws in on the Torah, right, which is really coming out of the Gemara, you should do Teal in the Sukkah. Hang out in the Sukkah. What does that mean? So let's start off by analyzing it fundamentally. Is this an... Let's do it like this. Teal and Shinon, right? These non-Achila, non-Shena type of things. Things that Shinon is learning Torah, right? So hanging out or learning Torah, the type of Torah that you're supposed to do in the circle, we'll get there in our Shem soon, in Sephdala. So these type of things. Is it A, absolute Chiyuv? Meaning to say, you must do them in the sukkah. In other words, you play a board game outside of your sukkah, you're mevatel an aseh. You did an isser. You did something wrong if you don't do it in the sukkah. Or else, is it just stam, there's a kiyum mitzvah if you do it. Meaning to say, if you do hang out in your sukkah, that's an added mitzvah. But is it something that, if I don't do it in my sukkah, and I chas v'shalom, I do it outside my sukkah, I'm in trouble? Let's say I'm supposed to learn in the sukkah. The type of learning I'm supposed to learn in the sukkah. Let's say I do it outside of the sukkah. Was I over on something? Or no, I just didn't get the mitzvah at that time. I wasn't vatal on a sick. It's not an absolute chiyuv. So which way is the truth of the matter? So there's actually a ton of rishonim who strongly imply that there's an absolute chiyuv. Amongst them, the sitter, Rav Slavin, I think it is, right? Maybe it was Rav Rugon. Right, we've got, we have Rashi in this camp. Guys, why does Rashi imply there's an absolute chiyuv? How does Rashi imply there's an absolute chiyuv to do these things in the sukkah that you're not allowed to do them outside of the sukkah? Well, by learning Torah, why does Rashi say you're allowed to do iyun? We'll get there again soon, right? Why are you allowed to do iyun outside of the sukkah? Because you have a ketor mitzvah. Only because there's a ketor are you allowed to do it outside of the sukkah. Implying if you don't have such a ketor, let's say the other type of learning, the deer stuff that you're supposed to do in the sukkah, you have no ketor to leave. I.e., there's an absolute chiyuv. You have no right to do it outside of the sukkah. If you learn, let's say you do Shtayim Mikra outside of your sukkah, you're over on this aset. You're mevatel on aset. So Rashi implies that by invoking, needing to invoke with Steyer, it's clear that Rashi holds that way as well. Other Rishonim, the Baal Mor is particularly clear. Baal Mor is the one that everybody was closest holding this one. Baal Mor thinks that maybe even Teal has a stronger chiyuv than even Achila to do it inside of your sukkah. Okay, it's fascinating. I just don't want to dwell too much on these things right now. We have the Meiri in this camp, if you want to other Rishonim, and we have Rabbeinu and Noah. All who imply this about Teal, about Avila. Therefore, what's a major Nachmina? This year, I had the unfortunate experience of watching people literally sitting outside of the sukkah, next to the sukkah, playing settlers for 3 hours. Shocking, right? Not only an image is not a key, why wouldn't you want a key of mitzvah? But it's insane to perhaps be against all the Rishonim who tell you that there's an absolute key, and there's a bitul asay if you don't do these things in the sukkah and instead you do them outside of the sukkah. Okay, so now, does anybody hold it's only a key of mitzvah? Indeed, there are some people who comply that. Well, Rabbeinu Thomas is Mefurish and Sefer Yashar. Additionally, Tosos Rabbeinu Yehuda, or the Talmidim of Rabbeinu Thomas, holds the same thing. And those two are the Rishonim that clearly express it. Now, is there anybody who might hold this way? Indeed, the Rambam might. Anybody know why the Rambam might apply it? Well, the Rambam does something strange. In Hilchos Sukkah, the Rambam first tells us, I think it's in Perek Vav, Halacha Hey, the Rambam first tells you, how do you do the Mitzvah Sukkah? Like, what's the Ketzah Mitzvah Sukkah? Right, what's the Mitzvah Sukkah? Rambam tells us that you do everything, your Darva Sukkah, you eat in the Sukkah, you do Shtiyah in the Sukkah, and your Darva Sukkah. Right, which some may include the teal and the learning. Then, in Halacha Vav, Perek Vav, Halacha Vav, the very next level, the Rambam goes back and tells you, basically, when is it usur
to do achila outside of the sukkah, one is asr to do shena outside of the sukkah,
implying that those other things that were mentioned beforehand are an asr if you do them outside of the sukkah. So there's a good chance the Rambam is in this camp. Okay? So these three Rishonim now have to explain something strange. Why is this different? Why not? Why isn't there an absolute chila? After all, isn't it in the same list with achila and shtiyah? What happened? Why isn't there an absolute chiyuv to do these inside of the sukkah? And therefore, perhaps giving a big, strong heter for those who sometimes sit outside of inside of their couch, but not inside. They're just sitting around, hanging around inside of their house, you know, because it's a little bit more comfortable in their house. Not that they're inside, but like, you know, that's where they always hang out. So, according to all these Rishonim, they're being mevatel on a set. According to them, perhaps that would be defense. No, they're not being mevatel, like they're just not getting extra mitzvahs. Okay, fine. So, why not? What would be the svara behind? Why would the Rishonim say that there's not, after all? Why is this any different than achila or shena? So, the Rav actually had one approach, that there's tzvei dina. The Rav believed that there's some things that are necessary biological. The Rav held two dinim. Right? There's necessary biological functions. And those ones are chiyuv. You have to do those in the sukkah, okay? And on the other hand, then, sorry, and then over here, we have things that are optional, right? Things that you don't need to do. Do you have to hang out? I mean, I'm sure the Rav didn't often hang out, right? You don't have to hang out in life. You have to eat. You have to sleep. You don't have to hang out. And contrary to what the truth of the matter is, right? But you don't have to learn Torah, right? You can survive physically without learning Torah. So those things are optional, and therefore, you don't need the sukkah to be done. There's like basically two separate things, and these ones are therefore just a kiyum. Right? However, Reb Ben Arsh, and for my little opinion, believed a little bit differently. Then, no, there's one din. Right? There's one din of being a kiyum living in the sukkah. However, listen closely. There's a different way to phrase this same sort of idea. Not that, oh, there's a mitzvah, which like, you must do this as the mitzvah, because you have to do these things physically, so now you have to do them in your sukkah. But rather, there's some things. If you do them outside of your sukkah, they undermine making your sukkah the diras keva. Let me explain. If you start eating inside of your regular brick and stone house, you start sleeping inside of there, your sukkah becomes that much less diras keva. What we started off with. There's a contrast going on here. You have to make your sukkah be all built up as the diras keva, and you have to make sure your house is a diras rai. The more things you do that are keva dip outside of your sukkah, the more you undermine the sukkah's value of being the diras keva. Therefore, some things, right, there's one dinam, yeshiva sukkah, that's a mitzvah, which you're chayav to live in the sukkah as you would have lived in your home. Now, by doing some things outside of the sukkah, it ruins the actual yeshiva sukkah. It ruins the diras keva, such as eating or sleeping. If you hang out, like you're chilling outside of your sukkah, does that mean like your sukkah is now not your home? No, I hang out all the time in all sorts of places. I don't only hang out in my home. But having real meals, sleeping, then I only do my home. If I do them elsewhere, that implies something else is not my home. Therefore, the keva actions, if outside, undermine sukkah as diras keva. But non-keva actions, like things that you don't only do at home, so if outside, don't ruin diras keva. You understand what I mean to say. I'm sorry if it's messy, I'm doing my best. Okay, let's move on. So that's a very important distinction about absolute chiyuv. Let me bring in another Dirshu footnote, which was very relevant. So they quote some of these marvakomas. In fact, on this side, they also happen to mention an Abu Drum that he says the following. Very strong language, right? Okay, he says that you're mevatel ase. So now Rav Chaim Kanievsky explains, that doesn't mean that you're not allowed to leave the sukkah, as we're going to get to, right? Teshuvah, the door is a very big idea. You're allowed to leave the sukkah Like, you don't have to stay there.
Chazanish's famous line about the sukkah is not a jail. You don't have to stay anchored in your sukkah when you don't want to. You're allowed to leave the sukkah. The difference is, once you leave the sukkah for, like, legitimate reasons, are you allowed to then do these type of actions outside, like hanging out for no real reason, or playing a board game, or learning the things that you're supposed to do in the sukkah outside of the sukkah. So that's what we're discussing. Not are you allowed to leave the sukkah ever. You're allowed to leave the sukkah. Just when you leave the sukkah, what are you doing outside of it? If you're just leaving for no good reason whatsoever, and you're just hanging out, you decide you want to talk with your family and friends in your living room instead of in your sukkah. That, according to the Rambam, is what the Bible says. And same thing with types of learning that you're required to do.
Okay, good. Let's move on a little bit more. So let's turn to another point that was mentioned over here about mani mechla.
Okay? Oh, and so in terms of halacha, Mike's obviously, I mean, we'll discuss many more things about teaching kitaduru, but obviously it's not a wise idea to do these things outside of the sukkah if you don't need to do, right? It's clear from many of the poskim that it isn't absolute fiyuv. Others maybe are mako, and maybe this is a good defense of those. But again, while you're allowed to leave the sukkah if you need to, but just to stam leave the sukkah and do things that you would be supposed to do in the sukkah otherwise is perhaps even more than just not getting mitzvot and being stupid, but perhaps even doing something wrong.
Okay, so let's move on now. Let's go to the mani mechla.
Right, so we learned in the Gemara this very strange thing. The Gemara tells us that mani mechla, right, food items, literally, food vessels, I should say, right, are supposed to be outside the sukkah. But mani mishta, drink items, are in the sukkah. Okay, what does that mean? So let's turn to this. Mani mechla. Okay, so I want to ask a few fundamental questions, and then we'll even dive back in our actual halakhic mice sources, and we'll try to figure out what exactly you possibly like. Okay, so now, mani mechla. Let's discuss this topic a little bit. First of all, what are these items, right? So, what are they, right? That's a fair question. What do we mean by these things? So, there we have two. You can sometimes read it as three, but it's a bad way to read it as three. Two different opinions. There are many Rishonim on either side. I'm just going to quote Rashi versus the Bahag right for now, but there's a lot of Rishonim on either side that...
Should I give you some names? You want some names? Mani Mechla. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot on both sides. You know, I don't want to bother just writing out all the names just for the sake of time.
Okay? There's a lot on both sides. Those have right, quoted Rashi, quoted the Bahag, and there's a lot of Rishonim on either side. So now, what are these? The Bahag says they are vessels used to cook in, or maybe to serve in, right? But let's assume the cooking vessels, okay? So these are the things that you, like, you know, a big cauldron that you made your soup in. As opposed to Rashi says, dirty dishes, right? So that's the distinction. Now, you might have looked at this and said, well, that's a really boring difference of things. What do mani mechla mean? Whoa, 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 no. We're going to see this is actually very fundamental, and it's going to lead to a lot of important units.
Okay, so now let's ask this question. Let's ask the following question. Are you chayav to remove them? Or is there a heter to not have them inside?
Let me clarify. Okay, so now, over here. What is the halacha? We have these mani mechla. The Gemara says, outside the sukkah. Mani mishta, just the, everything I'm going to say, I just want to clarify, mani mishta are just the reverse of everything. So I'm just not going to keep on repeating that. But mani mechla are outside the sukkah. Does that mean you are allowed to have these items outside of the sukkah? Or is it saying, don't you dare bring those into the sukkah. Leave them outside of the sukkah. That's a fair question. You understand the question? Which way is it? Is it saying, get them out of here, for example, because they're gross? Or you don't have to bring them in because these are the type of things that you don't really have inside of your home and take you need to do. So let's analyze this. Are you chayu to take out of sukkah, or just allowed to? Fair question? Understand, everybody? You're on the same page? Good. So now, let's analyze. Simple shot of these two, what I was just alluding to, Rashi would say, oh, it's a bizayon to have this in your sukkah, right? That's what you would think. Dirty dishes can't be in your sukkah. It's a chutzpah. Get rid of them. And therefore, are you allowed to leave the dirty dishes in your sukkah? No way. Get them out. You're not allowed to leave dirty dishes in your sukkah. Sukkah's a holy place. Right? That would be a simple way of looking at Rosh, right? As Oz Bahag would be the opposite. These things are big, vast cooking vessels. Where do you use them? You use them not in the living quarters of your home. You use them in the cooking quarters of your home. Understand?
Right? These aren't things that demonstrate teshuka in the livingness as if you do. No, the living quarters, your bedroom, your living room, that's what you're supposed to make your sukkah like. Not like the cooking area, not like the storage area, not like garage. Am I supposed to bring my bicycle into the sukkah because like my house has a garage? Obviously not. The living space, the teshuka in the duru is what you're supposed to do. And therefore, you don't have to bring in these bulky, weird vessels which have their own room. You don't have to, but if you do, is there anything wrong with it? Presumably not. So now let's see lots of different opinions in the Rishonim as to how to understand this. Okay, so on the side of Hector, right? When I say allowed to, I mean a Hector. Over here, I'm going to have a Chiyuv. There's a Hector to take them outside of the Sukkah versus you must get them out of the Sukkah. Okay, that's clear for everybody? Chiyuv is that you must get them out of the Sukkah. Hector is that you are allowed to get them out of the Sukkah. So the Hector side is pretty easy, right? Why am I allowed to? Well, if, like, Bahag, right, Rashi won't really fit this way, right? It's like, because why would you be, like, allowed to take them out because they're dirty? Like, that doesn't really connect. Like, dirty sounds like when they're dirty, they're not supposed to be here. But in the Bahag, you could say, the reason is why, it's like Bahag, so the point is because of Teshvu, Ke'in, Taduru, right? These and these aren't normal in living quarters. Okay, that makes sense? Good. But the chiyuv side is much more complex. And there's going to be lots of knots here, so we'll hold on tight. Yes, question.
Isn't there a Gemara that says to make a sign that you're not supposed to say you're not using your...
Beautiful. I'm here to jump. We're going to get there out. Very good. Okay, very good. Okay, so now let's go and analyze the chiyuv side. Why might there be a chiyuv to get rid of them? Okay, so let's go with three options over here. Number one, what you might have intuited as the Bach understands in Rashi, right? Because, I'll give them names, I guess. I might as well.
That's where you guys can look things up afterwards and call me out if you disagree.
Okay, so we'll say the Bach in Rashi. Hey, I'll give it like that. Bach in Rashi. So he says the following. He says, because of Bizoy Mitzvah. Right? So that presumably is only going within Rashi's pshat, right? As you could understand. But like, these things aren't gross per se. You know, these big pots aren't gross. But dirty dishes certainly are. Right? So, because of Bizoy Mitzvah, you have to get rid of them. That would be the Bach's understanding. And therefore, you have to get rid of them as quickly as you possibly can, because it's not appropriate for the Mitzvah. However, the Ravid and the Machanas of Shem have a different shot. Okay, what do they say? They say not Bizoy Mitzvah. They say, it's a Gezerah, and it might cause you to leave the Sukkah. Let's also assume the dirty dishes shot, right? Like Rashi's shot. It's exactly my leave the sukkah. What's that comparable to? You guys are familiar with many things, right? Like we mentioned on Yibes Mabes, the Yigmah, like some things that are gross, that are annoying, where worry will cause you to leave the sukkah. So therefore, these things still. There's a gzera. If you have gross items around, so like, get them out of the sukkah. Maybe this will cause you to leave the sukkah. And we move on from the mitzvah. So therefore, it's gzera, you might leave the sukkah unless you get rid of them. Okay? So that's their pshat. And finally, a third pshat that I have from the Rishonim, and this one I think is, in fact, quite beautiful, is the Ra'ah, one pshat in the Ritva, and the Mansur of Victory. That's one of the Talmidim of Rashi. He's a very cool individual. Okay, so now, he explains the following idea. This one, the Ra'ah, Ritva, one of his pshatim, and the Mansur of Victory. So now, these two presumably are within Rashi, right? Because these things are gross. These things are dirty. So therefore, you want to get them out of your sukkah as much as possible. Dirty dishes as opposed to big cauldrons. So Rashi, like this is presumably working within Rashi's pshat, right? You're with me on that? So this one, though, is going to be a little bit different. He says because it undermines, you can finish the blank now, the Diras Keva. Because if you have these non-home-like items inside of your pseudo-home right now, what's going to happen? You're undermining it being your home. Oh, yeah, really? You bring your bicycle into your home? No, you leave your bicycle in the garage. Oh, you bring your cauldron, which is generally in the cooking quarters, into your home? Get out of here. This is not a home. This is clearly a kitchen. This is clearly a garage. So it undermines, and therefore you must get rid of them. While these two, presumably, are working within Rashi's camp, right? Presumably. This one is working even within the Baha'is. You could say within Rashi that, you know, people don't normally live with dirty dishes, and like therefore it also undermines the Diras. I don't know if any of you have ever been in my apartment or in other people's apartments, but sometimes people do live with dirty dishes. You know, that all depends. That's a matter of style of living. But
What I think is nice about him is that he's even working with the Mahag, and that these things aren't supposed to be in the sukkah. They're supposed to be in the living, in the cooking quarters, not the living quarters. And thus undermine your dearest kept. Are there any nafkamina from this? Certainly. Right? Let's say it was normal to have in the house, but it's gross. So there's dirty dishes, right? So dirty dishes are normal to have in the house. So he would say that that's okay. They don't undermine the Torah. He would say, get rid of them, because that would cause you to leave the sukkah. Another potential nafkamina. How gross is gross? Right? Like, how gross is gross? So, like, if it's the type of thing that will actually make you leave the sukkah, well, then maybe it's going to be really, really gross. But if it's not a thing that's bizon mitzvah, maybe even a little bit of gross is going to be already something that you shouldn't be doing in the sukkah. And if it undermines your yiras kappa, maybe it's also, again, got to be really gross. So that might be another nafkamina. There's really a lot that you could say. Here's another good example. How soon must you remove them? Okay? How soon after must you remove them? And this is a good halacha l'maisekash. Right, so now let's just turn for a second. Let's break for a moment. And let's turn to the Shulchan Aruch, and then I'll ask that question again. I realize it's probably better to be medayik now in the Shulchan Aruch. Okay? So the Tiyul thing was just something that was really mentioned very briefly in the Shulchan Aruch. This is not really super clear in the Shulchan Aruch in terms of how we paskin, whether it's an absolute chiyuv or not. I already told you, it's the type of thing that you should certainly err on the side as an absolute chiyuv and not place settlers right outside of the sukkah. Bad idea, right? And try to maximize moving the sukkah as much as possible. Again, if you're doing it, just leaving the sukkah if you have a need, that you're allowed to do for the teacher who came to do it. But now let's turn to this question about halacha l'maisa. So, mani mecha, what did the Shulchan Aruch say? Let's look back. He said, keita, kela no matos no sukkah. The kli shtia, you go in ashishos and kosos the sukkah. You know, that's from the Gemara, those are the sukkah. Avo kli achila, there are, well, let's leave the Shulchan Aruch for himself for a second. Avo kli achila, you go in kederos the ka'aros, chutz the sukkah. You go in kederos the ka'aros. Be medayek, guys. Kederos and ka'aros, what's he saying? Both! Kederos, like Bahad. Ka'aros, like Rashi. Chutz the sukkah. So now that's why you appreciate whether Rabbi had added in. La'achar ha'achila. Right, after the achila, implying that only when they are gross. So now let's ask a separate halacha. So meaning, halacha, be careful not to have your cauldron in your sukkah. And additionally, don't leave your dirty dishes in the sukkah either. So now, how long am I not supposed to leave my dirty dishes in the sukkah for? Right, that's a fair question as well. So now the Me'iri is explicit. Where should I put this? Okay, I'll just leave it for a second. So for how long am I supposed to... How long am I allowed to leave these dirty dishes in the sukkah, right, or be in this scenario? So, the Me'iri says, you're allowed to leave them there as long as you want, until you're ready to do other things. Okay, so the Me'iri is pretty clear. Right? Yeah, it's okay, it's fine. Leave them there as long as you need to leave them there for. But now, once you're ready to do other things, like, you know, you want to sleep there, it's a little dirty dishes. When you're eating a meal, you're not to, like, be, you know, OCD about it. The second you finish the meal, everyone, chug out your dirty dishes. Like, wait, is he done yet? You know, like, standing over him? You don't need to do that. Mary, wait, when you're ready to do other things in the sukkah. So now, like, get the dirty dishes out. What are they doing? They're going to be gross. They'll make you leave, whatever it is. Okay, so that's according to the Eerie. I thought it was Medayek from the Aruch HaShulchan's interpretation of the Magen Avraham that it's Miyad. And there's other Rishon Achron who actually hold this, I think, more explicitly, that you have to get rid of them immediately. Indeed, as soon as you possibly can, get them out. However, the Dirshu Mishnah Berurah brings that... in terms of how soon after you have to Bazman, Bo Sarah Posias of Slavos Kishasim Lafo Han. Dasa, Gorn of Isn't Carlitz, Shehu Mishash and Simon Kobanansi de Lafo, Bain Sarah Kalafo, Shemisai Lafo, Lohti Niyadis Kila. Right? You don't have to hurry up and finish. It's really once everybody's done with the meal, and now it's normal to remove all the plates, so then get rid of them. So, Halach Lamaisa, the way I would extend it, they also quote the Eerie afterwards, but I think Pasha Pshadin. What makes the most sense to me is to say the following. That you don't have to be crazy about it and chuck them out. Look, even if it was for Rashi, that really bizoy mitzvah, I just ate off of it. Now it's a bizoy mitzvah to have this in the sukkah, that's a little bit strange. And Xavier, in terms of that, I'll leave if you leave it there for a few more minutes. I don't think you have to worry about it. Certainly not undermining your dira. Okay? So if you have it there for a few minutes, that's okay. But one should be machmir, right, when you're thinking, Amir Shem, when you have a family, right, and you finish your meal. So according to me here, you can leave them there as long as you like to sit around and talk and schmooze. But I would believe it's more correct is that once you finish the meal and everyone's done, as Rav Nissim Carlos, who just brought from the Dershim Shpura, says, clear the table. Meaning, don't just dilly-dally and not clear the table. And sit, say, 3 hours because you're not hungry for dessert yet, and then finally you're ready for dessert, bring them out, as the Meiri might have you do. But I would say, no. You should dafka, clear the table, as soon as is normal. Right? Always important to have common sense. Don't just fling everything out as soon as you can. But when you finish the meal, don't dilly-dally. Take the food and... Oh, good, good, good. I'm not up to that question yet about whether or not it ruins the sukkah. We'll get that to Alex's point too. But right now I'm talking about what you should do in terms of clearing the dishes. Clear the dishes. What about in terms of cauldrons? Right, so don't bring them out. So there's a fascinating question on Halacha Lemaisa about, let's say you have a serving pot. You cook the cholent inside of the crock pot, right? You're bringing the crock pot out to the sukkah now because it's like annoying, let's say, to dish it out. Or the soup pot, right? It's just bring it to the sukkah and do it for a little bit. So, Halacha Lemaisa, the Achronim are maskim, that you're allowed to bring that in, even though there's this kederos, the Mishnah Berurah talks about it, he says it's okay, as long as you just do it quickly if you need to. But, I mean, ideally, it's nice to be in Machmir, and the Mishnah Berurah will mention that roots to minute, not to bring those in sukkah at all. I know my own family, my father always said, we have the soup pot right outside, right? We have it inside of our home, right by the door, and my mother dishes out the soup there, then we bring it to our sukkah, and we bring it down. Okay, questions? Go for it.
Assuming if you normally bring the soup pot or crock pot to the table, it's not like cooking, like that's what you normally do.
I hear you. You're saying that it should fill in the taste of your dinner, and that's normally a thing to do. However, if you think that perhaps it undermines your dira in some way to have like a big chola pot on the table, which happens to be a little weird, but maybe to bring it in for a little bit is okay, but maybe you shouldn't leave it there. I'm with you. I'm with you. I think that there's definitely room to be made to bring it in and to serve is okay, but if you could bring things out, and it's going to be a big tier fun, make everyone's some content different, don't worry about it. Yeah, Benton.
I wanted to ask before we do that, is that regarding the miyad or smoothing? Smoothing with the other? Like, maybe he says that I can wait a little bit.
Meir says you can wait a little bit.
How many times do I just have the other?
I think that you should not wait a little bit. Yes, the Meiri is a shita to rely on. I think that you shouldn't, though. I think that it would make sense to me, at least, to always ask your own Rebbe. But this is what I'm telling you, I think, and that is that you have the right, and I mean, Rabbi Nissim Carlos, I didn't make it up, right, says that you're able to go and wait until everybody finishes, but then, presumably, you should get them out right then. Let's move on, guys. Let's ask another very important question here, and this refers to Alex's point beforehand and what I thought that was talking about, and that is the following. Okay, now if you leave these things in the sukkah, what's the status of the sukkah? Right? If in, and assuming there was a chiyuv to take it out, okay, so maybe I should put it over here, but whatever, you'll bear with me. So if it's in the sukkah, what's the status of the sukkah? Did you ruin it? So here we have three different opinions. The Rif and the Rive off of the Gemara Alex was quoting. The Gemara says later on to distinguish if you have no other place to eat on Shemini Atzeres, but you're not eating in the sukkah because of Baal Tosef. So you're stuck, but you have no place to eat. You're done with the meal on Shemini Atzeres. So you're allowed to eat in the sukkah. However, in order to make a heker, you're supposed to bring in items that you wouldn't normally keep in the sukkah, such as a candle or such as some of your money nechla. Implying, and in their opinion, that it makes the sukkah puzzle. That the sukkah puzzle b'di'evet even. Meaning, it's to say, if you have those dirty dishes in for too long, and you're eating that sukkah, it's not a key of mitzvah sukkah. And moreover, it can be really bad. So you're eating some bread after you left those dishes in for too long. You're being a basel and asay at that moment. So they hold that. Now, the Mochamos disagrees. Mochamos Hashem says no. He says that no, the sukkah is kosher b'di'evet. However, lechat chila aser lasas. Okay? You're not supposed to do this ideally. Means to say, going back to our point, don't leave these things in there initially, as the Gemara tells you. You're supposed to get rid of it. You're supposed to get rid of these things or not having the sukkah according to the side that says it's a chiyuv to get rid of that. So he says that. However, the Baal Maor and others, the Ran, Ritva in one, I think, right? Different Rishonim all say that no, and this would obviously align with the Heter camp, right? They say that no, there's nothing wrong, nothing bad happens to your sukkah when you leave these things too long. And the sukkah equals kasher lechat chila, right? You don't have to bring these items. This goes back to the Heter side, right? So these two are really on the chiyuv side. And this one's really on the Heter side about what the status of the sukkah. I think it's pretty possible that the sukkah is not possible, right? Everybody pretty much rejects the Rif and the Rivet, that it actually would ruin the sukkah, but even then you can say that they didn't mean that, right? But, and then they, based on the side that we've seen that there really is a chiyuv, you should avoid having these things, and that's certainly the minhag, that's how we pass, and you're not supposed to have these things inside of the sukkah. Chutz l'sukkah. That's how it works. Okay, let's move on to a shraga, a candle. Does anybody want me to take a picture of this board? Is that going to be useful for you? Oh, I'm going to write it.
Did you hear Alex if you were listening to him?
The super
take a picture. Then we have a smartphone. Do you want to take a picture quickly? Well, otherwise, I'm going to just erase it because I need the room. What was that Gemara? Where? Or what was the Gemara? The Gemara's point is that on Shmini Atzeres, if you were forced to, you have no place where you're able to eat in the sukkah. Otherwise, you're allowed to eat in the sukkah, but you have to make a hecker that you're not doing it in the Lashem Mitzvah sukkah. So you bring things in the sukkah you wouldn't normally bring into the sukkah. So the Rif says, oh, you made it the apostle sukkah, so you're not really in the sukkah. But other ones say, and that's how the Bacham HaSashem does, and other Rishonim say that, no, it's just that it's not normal, so it doesn't look like a sukkah anymore. You made a hecker. Right? And the other ones say they locked up in the morning, they figured it out their own way. Okay, I don't want to go too much into it. Okay, guys, good. All right, I'm erasing it. Okay, good. So now let's move on to a shraga. My middle name is shraga. What does shraga mean? It means candle, torch, right? So you're supposed to have shraga where? What did the Gemara say?
Here.
When? It depends, right? It depends. Trick question. Yes. When we have a shraga, what are we supposed to do? In the sukkah, outside the sukkah? So it depends. In a small sukkah, we say it's supposed to be outside the sukkah. Okay, so small sukkah equals out, and then big sukkah equals in. Right, so now there's a lot of questions we can ask about this as well. Okay, so your light source, what are you supposed to do with it? So, you know what? I gloss over something that I should bring in. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to pause for a second. Sorry to ignore the out of order. I should have mentioned something else that's very important. Right, in the Shulchan Aruch, what do we also say? We said that, in the end, the Ramah quotes from the Orchos Chaim, if you saw it in the Beit Yodeh, that you're not supposed to do Shun Tashmish Bazoi the Sukkah, right? That you're not supposed to do anything in the Sukkah. And he explains that that's also Pshat in Rashi, according to the Ba, right? That you're not supposed to do anything Bazoi. In Lasos Shum Buzzwit Maisa Bissuk. Okay, that's from the Orphos Chayim. One of the Rishonim. The Kova was either a compendium of it, a shortened version, or it was the source of it. Okay, anyhow, so the Orphos Chayim has this rule, and that's how the Bach understands Rashi. There's this idea of Bizui Mitzvah, which gets us to a very, very important point. The Raya and the Malkam Hashem clearly did not hold that this situation was about Bizoy Mitzvah, right? They said it's not Bizoy Mitzvah. The question is, why not? What is the Nekudas HaMachlokas between the Ba and the Malkam Hashem, or the Raya? Right? What are they arguing about? Why wasn't Bizoy Mitzvah relevant here? Aren't these things gross? They too are saying that it's about dirty dishes, right? So how come they say it was a Xeri Mitzvah? It's like implying it wasn't a Bizoy Mitzvah issue. He said it's Bizoy Mitzvah. Why are they arguing? So there's two ways to take this. One of two ways, which is going to be a very fundamental chakira. Okay? Here we go. Is it that sukkah equals more mekel? I'll just write it like that. Or is that sukkah is more machmir than other mitzvahs? Let me clarify what I mean. Bach says there's bizoy mitzvah by sukkah if you leave the dirty dishes. The Raavad says there's not, or he implies strongly that there's not an issue. What are they arguing over? So one way to analyze this would be the following. That the Bach believes that sukkah is just like any other mitzvah, and dirty dishes are gross. And the same way it would be bizoy mitzvah if you were to have dirty dishes equivalent by some other mitzvah, this is a chutzpah bizoy mitzvah. Bizoy mitzvah, by the way, as you know, is in the Gemara, right? It's like, there's lots of examples. One of them is like to do kisoy adam with your foot. You're not supposed to kick dirt with your foot. It's bizoy mitzvah, right? So bizoy mitzvah is not like a made-up concept by the Ba. But over here, that dirty dishes are gross, and sukkah has the same standard as every other mitzvah. And the Raavad and Mechamas Hashem argue. They say, no. Sukkah is more mekel than other mitzvahs. In a Hanami, you're not supposed to do mitzvahs in a disgusting way, generally. But by sukkah, teishmu kein tediru. Live like you live at home. So sukkah has a unique dispensation for you to be able to do things in a more mekel sort of fashion. I don't mean in general, you can ignore the mitzvah. I mean, to say teishmu kein tediru, we know, makes sukkah a more mekel mitzvah in general. So you can say that, no, dirty dishes are the same standards everywhere else. Bach, therefore, says, bizoy mitzvah. We're asking Mechamos and the Raavad say, no, it's not more mekel. It's not the same standard. Even though you're right, this is generally bad, here it's not a problem because it's more mekel. On the flip side, you could look at it the other way around. That dirty dishes are not gross. They're not considered something that's really bizoy mitzvah. And therefore, the Raavad and Mechamos are on the top, right? That makes sense. No bizoy mitzvah here, we have to make up some zera. And maybe people will leave because people are finicky. Ah, what's Pshat in the Bach?
The Bach says, a sukkah is not any other mitzvah. A sukkah is much more machmir. A sukkah is a mikdash ma'at. A sukkah is hashras ashkina. You think you're allowed to leave dirty dishes in that? No way. Higher standard of bizoy mitzvah, which would tie in beautifully to the Orphos Chaim, right? That analysis. The Orphos Chaim says, don't do anything degrading in a sukkah. Not a thing. Not a thing. Don't do it in the sukkah. Which sounds like there's a special idea in the sukkah. The sukkah is supposed to be very, very holy. Don't do it. And you should know there's lots of nachminas. What exactly counts as bizoy mitzvah? I want to clarify, there's this constant battle, and Mir Tashem, as we keep on learning, you see them, there's a constant battle between the holiness of a sukkah on one hand, the mikdash component of it, and on the other hand, it's your home. Chill in the sukkah, do everything. The Mishnah Berurah, for example, talks about speaking Lashon Hara. Does that count as teal? Are you supposed to speak Lashon Hara inside of your sukkah? On one hand, you speak Lashon Hara in your kitchen. Rav Schefter always says, you speak Lashon Hara in your home, you speak Lashon Hara in the sukkah. Right, but on the other hand, Lashon Hara in the sukkah? It's like speaking Lashon Hara in the Kodesh Kodashim. Are you really going to do that? So the answer is don't speak Lashon Hara. But you should know that Manreel says if you're going to shmooze, you should shmooze in the sukkah. That's part of teal. Shmooze in the sukkah. And don't worry about that. It's another aspect, right? That's important nachmina. What about Tash Mishamita? In the sukkah, out the sukkah. Right? Obviously, in a way where it's viable, in a way where it's not in any way public. Husband and wife have their own private sukkah, it's off their bedroom. And Tash Mishamita, in the sukkah, outside the sukkah. So, on one hand, you're not allowed to do that in the sukkah. It's so gross. But the Taz, halach levice, in case you saw it, would be paskin, is that the achronim are maskin in the sukkah. It's something, it's a mitzvah. Mitzvahs are done in the mikdash. That's how you're supposed to do it. In fact, therefore, we would paskin that you're allowed to do it in the sukkah. Okay, so that is an important chakir to mention. I realize that, Wait, what time is it now? 52?
Yeah.
Good, I got 8 minutes. Okay, good. Okay, so let's keep going. So let's go to Shraga. Okay, you guys ready for Shraga? We might not end up getting to sit down today. I'm sorry, I'm doing my best. I hope you guys you're enjoying and following. Let's move to Shraga. Okay, so a candle. In a small sukkah, it's outside the sukkah. Okay? So now the question is, why is it supposed to be outside of the sukkah in a small sukkah? So here we have five different opinions, three mainstream ones that are quoted in the Mepharshim here and the Poskim here. Opinions are going to be very important. I'll label them A, B, and C. And then D and E are more obscure, but you should know them. Okay, so let's mention the mainstream ones at first. Okay, so this is the Rokea and the Bach in Rashi. Again, you guys already know from that what am I going to be referring to. And also the Mahariyo. Tashmei Ashkenaz over here. Mahariyo. What do they say? You can guess. Because it's gross, right? Mios. It's not nice. You have this burning candle in here, and you've got a small sukkah. Like, you're basically sitting next to this gross earthenware vessel, right? Diak and Rashi, that's where the Bach is coming from. That we have cheres. Earthenware is gross. Dafka, earthenware candles are a problem, because in a small sukkah, when something's right in your face, it's much more gross than when it's distant. Okay? That's their understanding. What is another understanding? We have, this is a lot of Rishon. This is probably the mainstream. This is Tosfos and the Rush. Right, and there's others. It's that there is a fear of burning down the sukkah when it's small. Fear of burning down sukkah. Okay, now why is that a problem? You could look at that in a bunch of ways. One of them, maybe it's dangerous. Okay, some understand it from its danger side, maybe because of the fact that you'll be bavachal from your mitzvah now, because your sukkah is going to be gone. Okay, but the issue here is that in a small sukkah, you're dealing with an open flame. That's a pretty scary thing. You don't want that near your walls. Okay, so that's the second mainstream approach, and perhaps the most mainstream of them. And then finally, we have the Rav Yah, quoted in the Mordechai.
Is this all big sukkah?
This is all in the small sukkah. These are all in the small sukkah. Why must it be out? Okay, why must it be out of the sukkah? Either because it's gross when it's right in your face, and then everything you'll get is going to be alternative. So in a big sukkah, it's not gross because it's not right in your face. Or because you're afraid it's going to burn down. In a big sukkah, you're not afraid it's going to burn down. You have space. The Rav Yah, according to Mordechai, and there's other people on this as well. The Taz in understanding Rashi. Taz in Rashi, as opposed to the Bach's understanding. Right, so what's this pshat? That is that it's mimait. The shear of this sukkah, right? When you're talking about a shear sukkah, okay, we need 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. So this gets to a separate question. What do we mean by small? How small is small?
small, right? When we say small, what does that mean? So on one hand, you could say Zion, no, literally small, as Rashi indeed does. That's where the Taz is coming from. Rashi says Zion al Zion, literally small. You know, a sukkah katana, and the rest of the Masechta, right, as we've been learning, right, means like a tiny sukkah, a minimum size sukkah. Alternatively, it just means pretty small, right? Like it's a compact, you know, not a comfortable sukkah. At which point, how would these roll weight, right? So this Taz in the Rashi is basically saying, it's Zion line literally, because if you have a minimum size sukkah, and you have fire in the sukkah, do you have 7x7x10 of usable airspace? Nuh-uh. You have a burning flame, you can't go anywhere near that flame, that decreases the shear of the sukkah. And fundamentally now, this is possible. Now let's go deeper. Is this something which makes the sukkah bad fundamentally on the rice level, or on the rabbana level? To these two, Mios is not going to pass the sukkah. This is not going to pass the sukkah, right? Still, kosher, bidi, evan. Yeah, it's two Rashi's with different pshatas in Rashi. Bach understands Rashi saying this because Rashi says sex. Kataz understands Rashi saying this because Rashi says Ramad Shir. Guys, Rashi says daf, 7x7. Okay, but according to this, it's going to be hustle, bidi, evan. Right? Because, whoa, you don't have the size of a sukkah in that case. Okay, so that's an important chakira and not kamina between them. Now, the other ones are pretty similar. One of them, I think, was in the Rebbe Tom or in the Eri. I don't recall which one of them it was. This one was in the Remiel and Neil. Noah. Both of them say it's a gezeira. Okay, but which type of gezeira? This one is because you are from the hevel, you might. Okay, you know, I'll just do that. It's simple. Gezeira, you may leave. Right? Similar to what we had over here. Gezeira, you might leave. So there's a gezeira you might leave in the small sukkah when there's an open flame. So from this, because the, you know, the smoke bothers you, the feeling of flame near you bothers you, and this is from fear of being so close to an open flame. Okay, so either the smoke will bother you, the hevel of the flame is going to bother you, or the fear that you're going to get burned from it. At which point, this one also would still be kosher b'dieved, right? Because it's just like gezeira that you shouldn't do it. But nonetheless, it's a different concern. It might cause you to leave the sukkah if it's a small sukkah. Is that talking about pretty small or Zion al-Zion? Probably talking about pretty small, right? Because even then, there's no idea this concern. Okay.
Hevel,
it's like the you know, like that like stuff that's around fire. I don't think it literally means like the smoke. It's probably not bothering you. Yeah, it makes it uncomfortable. It's probably the point. It's uncomfortable. It might cause you to leave. Okay, so therefore you're not allowed to have it. Doesn't make it zero shrufa? Why would it? It's not unmanageable. This is basically making it zero shrufa in a certain sense. It's making it too small for this year. But this means I don't think it's zero
shrufa.
No, most people say that's kosher.
Isn't it trying to annoy?
What? Well, okay, so we're going to get to that. There's one av line in your sukkah. That's a good question. Oh, speaking of which, that is fantastic. Okay, so we have these different options. It has to have understand what the idea of shrag is. So how do we paskin? Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch doesn't really indicate, right? The Shulchan Aruch just says menorah. What was he saying, menorah? That's it. Coming off of the Rambam, right? And you know what? Before I get to the Tzav, let's just speak out some more of the nachminas, right? There's going to be a lot of nachminas here. Let's say it's a nice candle, right? If it's a nice candle, you know, it's a pretty candle, according to this opinion, I can totally have it in my sukkah. According to these ones, I can't have it in my sukkah. Oh, here that it's nice. It's on fire. So I might burn down my sukkah, or it might be my this year of the sukkah. But I don't care if it's made of gold, right? That's why they say there's no difference between made of gold or not. And Pashas is the Shofar saying the same thing. He doesn't distinguish what the menorah is made out of. Okay, now additionally, what?
Shofar doesn't distinguish between gold and not.
Exactly, implying that we don't, I mean, the Pashas is that we don't pass like the Rashi one. It's really one of these ones. Okay, and really, if not even mine, Pashas is how we pass is going to be the closest to the Rashi side. Over here, if you want. But let's keep going. So, that would be one nachmina. What's another nachmina? Not only about how nice it is, but another nachmina might be, in terms of if you exactly perfect, very good job. If it's on fire, right? According to Rashi, I don't care if it's on fire or not. It's gross as it is. So this gross candle can't be my sukkah. I don't care if it's on fire or not. But according to these ones, it's dafka when it's on fire. So another one, if we're possibly like these ones, so it's dafka when it's lit. However, the Achronim all do mention being machmir for Rashi, and pretty much you should avoid gross candles in your sukkah anyhow, which really ties back to having things that are buzzing in your sukkah. You don't want to have nasty things in your sukkah as it is. So regardless, we're pretty much machmir for Rashi, lahalacha. However, the real pshat is because we're actually afraid of it, and therefore would only be while it's lit.
Let's go to our modern day lights. Certainly they increase Simchas Yontif, right? Nobody has candles in their sukkah. I mean, it actually matters for your Shabbos candles, but also none of us have small sukkahs. However, if you had like a massive torch, maybe that would still be a concern from these ones. Lamaisa, all of our lights are not really flammable, and they all greatly increase down to Simchas Yontif. They're certainly not gross. We all have lights everywhere, right? Lights are gross. Maybe you shouldn't have it like right in your face, and you shouldn't use a gross light. Like, you know, if it's a really something that you just dug up in your garage for only you pull it out for sukkahs, so clean it off. Have nice things in your sukkah. But lamaisa, these conversations aren't really relevant. First of all of us have big sukkahs. Now, okay, you might say, well, that's something's only pretty small, right? Okay, so maybe some people do have small sukkahs, but regardless, it's not actually dealing with an open flame. It's generally not dealing with something gross. So all of this becomes not really relevant. Halacha lamaisa. Is there any last point on this that I should mention? I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave Sif Dalit for another time. I didn't realize. I mean, it's not a chiddush for those of you who know me. I just want to make sure that I don't leave out anything about the Shrag in specific. Right, other details, but none of which are really relevant halach l'maisa, but there's definitely a minhag. The Magen Avraham brings a minhag to me, even though we pass like this one. All right, guys, with that, we will end now.